Jeff and Eric noticed one day that nobody on the internet talked about bouvets, so they had to find a way. They'll podcast thoughts on new movies they've discovered through autumn, winter, spring, and summer on Fridays. And when you run out of films you love to view, tune into jokes, playing games, all this and more you'll find contained on TBS with Bear and Snyder.
Hello, welcome to Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, the world's only podcast brought to you by oneofus.net. I'm your host, Eric D. Snyder, here with my co-host, Jeff Bear.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jeff Bear. That was my co-host, Eric D. Snyder, and welcome.
Welcome to one and all to the show. The summer blockbuster season has begun, as you'll see from the size of the blocks that these movies bust that we talk about today.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yes. I 100% agree with you. It has officially started. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it officially started with the Avengers, right?
Whatever.
Let's not kid each other.
Whatever.
But now it feels like we're in a groove.
Now we're into it. But before we get to the reviews, we have a sponsor this week. If you go to moviebs.com, there's a link there where you can contribute to the Movie BS Perpetual Lunch Fund. Should we tell them? The abbreviation for Perpetual Lunch Fund is PLF, which is also the Palestinian Liberation Front. And I think we should change the name. We just have to not use the abbreviation is all. The name's not a problem. I looked up, there's lots of other PLFs. In fact, the terrorist one isn't even the first one that comes up when you Google PLF.
Anyway, well, maybe one day, God willing, we'll be the first.
apparently, we learned this. If you PayPal someone some money and in the subject line of the note for the money just only put PLF, it gets flagged by PayPal. And they say, mm-hmm. Hey, wait a minute. What's this all about?
Yeah.
So what was that? My computer just farted. I don't know if you heard that. Yeah. Excuse you, iMac. Anyway, but yes, if you contribute to the Perpetual Lunch Fund, if you contribute at least $25, you can sponsor the show.
Like
Ashley has done. Ashley has done this, and she would like us to pimp her friend Sam's blog called an Inanimate Effing Blog.
Ooh.
It's inanimateblog.com. And they got it's Sam. That's a girl. It's girl Sam. Sam and her friend Emily write reviews for movies and TV. Ashley says they're no Bear and Snyder, obviously, but the reviews are pretty entertaining.
Well, because they're stuck being women, probably.
That's probably a major handicap. I'm sure.
Yeah. Tough break.
Well, only in so far as trying to be me and you, that would be a major like setback to not be able to be Bear and Snyder being a woman.
Yeah.
Everything else we do, a woman could do. But, like, actually being you and me.
Well, no, I think technically the word is better. They do it better.
A lot of times, yeah. Yeah. Sam and Ashley have been fans of our show. They even do their own summer box office challenge.
Ooh, I like it.
Listen to this. Since Sam lost horribly last year, she will soon be posting a positive review of a movie she hates as her punishment.
Oh.
She'll be writing a positive review of Prometheus.
Oh. So does that mean... Well, now I'm curious about this.
Does she have to be sarcastic?
Is she lying?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is she being sarcastic? Or is she finding the positive in something that she otherwise feels is negative?
You know, I guess the way to find the answer to that question would be to go to inanimateblog.com and read it. Actually, is it even up there yet? It says she will soon be posting it. It may not be there yet. Okay. Anyway.
So don't go right now, guys. don't do it.
Inanimateblog.com.
We'll have a link to that if you're furiously trying to find a pen and paper. Mm-hmm. Just relax.
Because you can't remember this simple phrase, inanimate blog.
Yeah, just go to Movie BS. Don't worry about it.
Anyway, so
you don't have to worry about spelling things or thinking.
Thank you one and all for your contributions to the PLF and to all the terrorist organizations.
The Perpetual Lunch Fund. And, our fake sponsor today.
Mm-hmm. What are you drinking?
Coffee.
Ah, good old coffee. That's an old standby.
Have you guys heard of coffee? I like it. In fact, if you're looking for just a good, solid, run-of-the-mill coffee, maybe mm-hmm. a little darker, mm-hmm. consider Joe's Dark from mm. Trader Joe's.
All right. And that's darker because they get darker dirt that they boil in the water?
Yeah, I don't
know. All right, I guess.
It's meteor. Right. There's some grit.
Ooh, meteor.
Some true grit. All right.
Speaking of gritty and grit and dirt and dirt and grimy things and apocalyptic wastelands, let's talk Pitch Perfect 2.
Yeah.
No, I kid. Mad Max Fury Road.
Fury Road. All right, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Are you guys ready? Here's the whole thing about Mad Max Fury Road, and then we'll get into a little bit more of the details. The entire movie consists of this. Hey, let's get out of here. Let's go that way. Mm-hmm. And then once they get somewhere, they go, hey, okay, now we got to figure out where we should go.
Right.
That's it. That is the movie, and it is glorious.
It's
glorious.
It's basically a two-hour car chase. It's a big chase scene, many cars chasing each other across the deserts.
I completely disagree with you.
All right. Tell me how you're wrong.
It's two car chases because there's a little break in the middle.
Well,
you get a breather.
Yes, but I mean, essentially, most of the movie is cars chasing each other.
Would you? You are somebody who looks at his watch on occasion during movies. Mm-hmm. Little inside information for everybody wanting to know more about the life and times of Eric D. Snyder.
Not at my watch, but at my phone with the time. Yeah.
Okay. Wait, did it used to be your watch?
Until a couple years ago, when my watch broke.
Okay. Oh.
I know. Now I keep my phone in my shirt pocket so I can just peek in there and nobody sees the
light.
It's
like your little friend.
Yeah, like my little friend, my little glowing friend in my pocket.
Okay. So did you by chance time either one of the car chases?
No, because I didn't realize that it was going to be a very, very long car chase. So it didn't occur to me to note the time.
So my hunch is they're each about 30 minutes long.
I mean,
my hunch.
The movie total is exactly 2 hours, and I think it contains about 3 hours of car chases.
I don't know how they did it.
It's an amazing – it has to do with Australia and the metric system and the Coriolis effect. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, what's great is the story is very simple. Here's the story. It's after the apocalypse. The world is mostly destroyed, and mm-hmm. you got a grotesque, deformed dictator monster. Immortan Joe is what he's called.
I didn't
make out his name being said aloud in the film, but I also couldn't make out some of the words because they're Australian.
What did I technically write down for his name? Because I kept trying to figure it out, and I think I wrote down Immortal.
Okay.
Actually hearing Joe.
Yeah, I don't know. And anyway, he's a bad guy, and he rules the remaining people by controlling their meager water supply. And he's got a little army and a harem of women. And then
and some little white boys.
Little smooth albinos, smooth albino warriors who are his war boys. And
I don't know if they – I don't think they're albino. I think they powdered themselves.
Just powdered, painted white. Well, they look albino.
Yes. So albinist. You're an albinist.
I am an albinist. You know that. And so then Max, loner Max, comes along and
– do you know Max's last name?
Rokitansky. Rokitansky. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I know. And then also there's – and that's Tom Hardy, of course. Then also you got where's her name? Imperator Furiosa.
Furiosa is what you'll mainly hear.
Imperator is a title, I gather. There are other Imperators, yeah. And her name is Furiosa. That's Charlize Theron. She works for Joe, Immortan Joe, but they have a difference of opinion on some things. So it winds up with Max and Furiosa on the same side, sort of working against the evil Joe.
Yeah, takes a little while for them to get there, but they eventually get there. And it's kind of you can tell that that's going to happen
because you can
tell that while Max might be very mad, mm-hmm. he's not bad.
He's not a bad guy at all. Certainly not. No,
and you can
be mad
fairly,
too.
Right. And you can tell that Furiosa is motivated by other things than what Joe wants out of the land.
Well, because she's not evil like Joe is. So mostly it's these two sides fighting each other. And usually when you have a war, people will stand still and they'll shoot at each other or they'll stab each other, whatever. In this case, there's no time to stop and have a war. So it's all these cars driving very fast across the desert, and they battle while they're in motion. They don't even pull over. So you got guys jumping from one car to another. You got these sort of almost catapult sort of lever gravity based things that can fling people over.
You got spiked cars.
Yeah.
Cars are all tricked out. Plenty of motorcycles and everything.
Your armored vehicles. They've got, you know, your flamethrowers and your armor and stuff.
And here's something that's nice, I think. What George Miller has been able to do with the look and feel of this film is put you completely and utterly in a different world that is fully realized. Mm-hmm. And
it's set in modern day Australia.
and there's tons of little things that give you the impression of how things work in this society, but yeah. they don't explain much at all. Like,
lots of little details. It's a hodgepodge of different kinds of cultures and influences.
Yeah. Not only that. Part of me, when I was watching this movie, I was like, man, they are guzzling a lot of gasoline.
Mm, yeah. Where they get all this gas.
But there is a place called Gasland.
Sure.
Clearly, they have a lot of gas at Gasland, yeah. And it's like, all right.
And yeah, we see rather than hear details about it, we see kind of what they've got set up for what Immortan Joe has for keeping himself and his family healthy. They got blood bags and women providing milk you get the sense of it. And they make reference to Valhalla, which is a Viking thing, I think. But then there's also things that were clearly influenced by other cultures and. Yeah, it's right. This big society has broken down, and now it's sort of rebuilding itself.
And if you can, when you go to the theater to watch this movie, at one point you'll see a lot of information on Mad Max's back. You should have the guy in the booth pause it, so you can fully enjoy everything there. I was only able to catch two little nuggets mm-hmm. on his back, and I'm very much looking forward to somebody being like, oh, here's the screenshot. Here's I want his back fully explained, because that in and of itself, I feel like is probably, you know, three or four movies right there.
Probably, yeah. There's a lot of backstory hinted at. And this is a kind of a remake. George Miller's not calling it a remake. It's more of a revisiting of this world.
I just watched The Road Warrior, which is considered the best out of the three. And there's nods to that movie.
Yeah.
You can definitely see, oh, yeah, I remember that part in this, and I remember that moment in this.
This character has the same name, Max Rockatansky. Yeah.
But it's just simply nods.
Yeah, that's because you may recall in the original Mad Max, it begins with Mel Gibson. He's got a wife and kid and stuff, and then they die, and then he – spoiler alert for the first Mad Max. They get killed, and then he – gets mad.
And he was a cop that world, and he's still a cop. It's still the same character.
But this movie starts with his family's already dead. He is already Mad Max as we know him.
Oh my gosh, the opening of this movie. Oh my gosh. I will be pleasantly surprised if I see a better opening for a big blockbuster. It was great. And I have two tiny, tiny, tiny issues, and then we can get back to praising it.
All right.
I don't know if I loved Tom Hardy in this movie. Like, in other words, if they were to tell me, supposedly they're making three others and he's already signed on, but if they were to tell me, oh, we're going ahead and, you know, we're going to replace Tom Hardy, I'd kind of be okay. For some reason, and I don't know if it's necessarily because Mel Gibson owned this role. I don't know that. It was just kind of like, all right. There's Tom Hardy, whereas I didn't feel that way with Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
And it's her movie, by the way.
Well, that you just answered your own question. The movie is Max is the title character, but he doesn't say a lot. And I mean, he's involved, but he is not a talkative fellow. And I don't think he's a very interesting character.
The only reason he's the lead. The only reason he's the lead is because we're clearly going on the journey with him, in the sense that we're inside his brain, experiencing his nightmares and flashbacks on occasion. That's the only reason he's technically the lead. But otherwise, Charlize Theron is front and center, and it's glorious.
She's great. But even her, I don't feel like her. I don't think any of the characters are particularly either of the characters are particularly memorable.
And that comes to my second point, which is. Oh, okay. The movie ended. I did not. I did not. There was nothing juicy about that ending for me.
Right.
It just simply ended.
Yeah, it's a big, loud, exciting, and thrilling, and blow your face off.
I can't wait to see it again. I cannot story. Wait to see it again.
But yeah, there, I wouldn't say that I felt like a strong emotional connection to anyone. But it's not mindless action either. I think they've got, like we said, there's lots of details that are hinted at. We see different the different kinds of crazy people and different kinds of crazy ideas they have. As just as society is falling apart.
Feet. You see
people have got the gout. It's gout and goiters.
Oh man. And not only that, just like Road Warrior, there are lovely, very minute bits of humor here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you blink and you miss it, somebody's playing with his nipple.
Yeah.
And it's just a little tiny thing. But, like, there's a bunch of these things spread out. And I just within minutes, I was just like, oh, I want to stay in this world for as long as possible. Increase the running time for me, please. Mm-hmm. But it didn't. It stayed the same.
It's a lot of fun. It's not terribly gory or graphic in that way. It's violent, but it's not. I braced myself for it to be a lot bloodier than it was.
It'll be interesting if the test will be my wife eventually. Like what will she think of this if I have her watch this? I really can't tell at this point because there is something off-putting about the look and feel of the movie in a good way for me. I can easily see.
I can't imagine her liking this movie. I can't imagine. And I know that I'm notoriously bad at predicting your wife's
but
taste
she,
in
she
things.
She does like car chases.
Yeah, but.
But like, but I'm so, thinking more of like the ones that are in the Bourne movies.
Yeah, and this is, it's so tense and.
And ugly. But it's a, ugly. God, it's a gorgeous film. It is such
very beautifully a good shot. Look. They went out of their way to make it look as beautiful as it could, given the fact that it's the apocalypse.
Lovely, lovely wide shots. Some scanning shots that come in where you're clearly, like, they clearly have a helicopter overhead. Like, just, oh man.
It so is, much fun
and,
to watch.
And. Even though you know some of it is CGI, you don't feel like you're living in a CGI world.
No, and most of it's not. Most of it apparently was practical. And,
yeah. No, and there's a lot great. Of obviousness to that. But, like, there is moments where you're like, oh, okay. Like, I understand that there's probably green screen involved in this particular shot. But thankfully, God, George Miller knows what he's doing.
And he shoots it all. It's not, you know, there's no shaky camera stuff because he wants us to be able to see these amazing stunts that he's set up. Just so much fun. Hoo boy, oh. Lots of fun. It's an easy A-.
Oh, I give it a 2 out of 10. I didn't really. I'm kidding. It's a 9 out of 10.
That means it's BS approved.
It's BS approved. Again, give me a little bit more out of Tom Hardy, which might help in a future installment. And you stick a little bit better ending, and that would have been a 10 for me.
There's also Nicholas Holt as Nux. He's one of the smooth albinos.
I really liked his performance.
That to me was the most interesting and entertaining character. That was the character I enjoyed the most.
And yes, and I will say with Nux, he was the one that I would have wanted to. I wanted him to tell me more of his story. I wanted to hear about his life a little bit more compared to anybody else in the film. Did you know there was somebody called Toast the Knowing in this movie?
I'm looking at the list of the character names, I don't think we hear most of them in the film. Yeah, Toast the Knowing, the Splendid Angerad.
No, are you ready for this? This is my favorite. The Doof Warrior.
Mm.
The Doof.
Cheeto the Fragile. Yeah. You can tell that a lot of insane thought went
into my
it.
Gosh. It's so good.
George Miller. What a loser.
See it in 2D if you can. You saw it in 3D with your 2D glasses.
Yes.
Did you feel like there was darkness, or did you feel like it was a bright enough movie? Because a lot of it does take place in the sun.
Yeah.
So I don't. You know, sometimes a 3D movie actually thinks about the fact that it'll be darker.
This wasn't shot in 3D, and George Miller told people not to see it in 3D.
I heard something different.
No.
But I haven't checked. I haven't checked my sources.
So that's good enough for me. And of course, I'm not a 3D fan anyway. But there's another movie. Pitch Perfect 2.
Do you recall way back when Pitch Perfect came out, what you gave it?
I do. I gave it a B, and I have a memory of seeing it with friends who were visiting in town that weekend. You were out of town. I remember all this because my friends and my parents were in town that weekend. You missed them because you were gone.
Where was I? Did I have a good time?
I don't remember where you were. But I remember seeing it with these friends and feeling like they enjoyed it a lot more than I did. And like I liked it. It was fine. It was fine. And I laughed some. But I felt like, it's a B, B minus. And then I feel like when I gave it a B that I was doing that to keep my friends from being mad at me. I kind of feel like they peer pressured me into giving it a B instead of a B minus.
I remember giving it a 6 out of 10 when I eventually – oh, this is the weird – you're right. This is the weird one where I ended up catching the second half before another screening at some point because I missed the screen, whatever the case may be. And then I eventually saw the whole thing. And I was and I remember feeling like – that's right. I never technically reviewed it, but I remember feeling like, oh, that's a 6 out of 10 for me.
Sure. Sure.
All right. So this time around,
people loved it. People loved it. And they so ate it up. Another one.
Mm-hmm. So here we have another one. And it's that kind of a sequel to where since we've been gone from their world, everything's been going great. Mm-hmm. So then the film immediately starts by bringing them back down worse than they've ever been before, disgracing them.
Introducing
some
new problems.
Way we can. And you know what? I hate when movies do this with their sequels. I know this is going to sound awful, but Sex and the City did this for their second movie. And it was just one of those things of like, can't you just evolve? Can't you just go on to a new adventure as opposed to, oh, no, now we're not happy anymore. Right. Even though we showed you we were happy and life was great.
Well,
there
has to be conflict or else it's not a new story.
Yes, there can be conflict. But couldn't the conflict simply have been – oh, my goodness. Now we have to try to do something that's never been done by Americans
before.
Now
we're too successful? Yeah.
No, win worlds.
Right.
Like, that could have just simply been it, but no, they had to be disgraced.
That's –
is it the Bellas?
The Bellas, yeah. Sure, that's the first of a thousand things wrong with this bad movie.
We're going to feel differently.
Not bad. I didn't say bad. Mediocre. Okay. Not good. You got to they've had a little disgrace and embarrassment. Well, the embarrassment, of course, was that a fat person, the fat one in the group, you know, Fat Amy. Uh-huh. I don't know if you know that she's fat. I don't know if they've mentioned that she's fat.
Yeah,
but Fat Amy is fat. And during a show, she accidentally flashes her naughty parts. And because she's so fat, that makes it gross and hilarious and embarrassing.
Yeah.
And so now the Bellas have been disgraced.
That does make it worse, right?
Well, because she's fat and it's horrifying.
Right,
you know,
because it's fat.
Because
Fat
she's
Amy
fat.
Is fat.
Right. Fat Amy is fat. And so they've been disgraced and whatever. But now, yeah, if they can win the World Cup of acapella, then they will be reinstated at their stupid fake college and everything will be okay.
But Becca's moving on.
Becca,
because
Anna,
she's going to graduate soon, and she's got this internship.
Doing an internship
at a recording
studio,
she can't tell the truth with her insanely good friends. She can't tell the truth.
Can't tell them that she's got this internship because they'll be upset that she's not 100% focused on her extracurricular activities at school.
Even though it's completely obvious that she's not focused on her extracurricular
because
activities.
Because they all live together in the a cappella sorority house.
And she's been giving assignments. Yeah. And she's been giving assignments that she's not doing for
right.
them.
Yeah.
So whatever.
So her best friends are all stupid and don't know anything's going on.
Yeah.
There's a new girl, Haley Steinfeld. She shows up. Steinfeld.
I think it's Steinfeld. Yeah, yeah.
Haley Steinfeld. She. I don't remember. Did her character have like a purpose? She did write an original song, so they weren't just doing covers.
That was it.
That was it. Okay, she wrote an original song. And she also is the love interest for Benji, who's the sort of bumbling, mealy-mouthed guy.
He likes magic.
Likes magic, yeah. And scenes are kind of sweet together and totally pointless. They cut all their scenes out of the movie. You don't have to change anything.
Agreed. It was just because it's like, well, Steinfeld's like the new – And honestly, here's the thing also. If they continue this, isn't the impression, she'll be
– they got to bring
in new
blood.
If they continue this world,
right.
Now we have somebody to carry on.
Because characters will have to graduate from college and leave, yeah.
All right. Everybody is incredibly one note in this movie, which is weird because they're singing. I didn't even realize I was saying. It's like, okay, we have a Hispanic, and she's been through hell, and she's going to say that at every time.
So everything she says will be a joke about how terrible life was in Mexico, yeah.
Okay, we have a lesbian, so everything that the lesbians will say is about being a lesbian.
And about wanting to get on with the ladies, yeah.
Right, and it's so on and so forth, and it's just like, you know what? This isn't – this isn't like – female power. This is just stereotypes and lame jokes. And I'm so easy to please when it comes to montages mm-hmm. and singing upbeat songs.
Yeah.
Especially a cappella. Mm-hmm. That, like, that's the reason I can sit through this movie and enjoy the easy entertainment that it's handing me. But everything else is just kind of like, really?
It felt to me like this one has a lot less singing than the first one and a lot more of these side romances. Bumper and Fat Amy.
I think Bumper's hilarious.
This
is the weird thing, too.
That's amusing enough.
That's Adam Devine.
Yeah.
And then who's the boss? Who's the boss at the internship?
What's his name?
Right.
Key, Peele. Either Key or Peele. Key. Keegan-Michael Key.
Those two, to me, are the standouts of this film, and that's awful.
Yeah.
It should have definitely been one of the eight women that should have been front and center. And how did you feel about Elizabeth Banks, John Michael Higgins with their podcast and their jokes?
I don't remember him this could just be not remembering well, but I don't remember him being such a clueless retrograde bigot in the first one. Was he?
They increased that.
Okay, yeah, because he says a lot of – and, you know, it's supposed to be offensive, the things that he says, but
– Right.
Yikes. But overall, I mean, I thought they were very funny in the first one. In this one, they were hit or miss.
My problem, once again, with them in this world is they're doing sketch comedy in a film that's not this crazy.
Yeah.
Like, they're not real. There's no way that those people exist.
Well, but
way that they do on the stage that they do.
But the same could go for the Mexican girl who only talks about how terrible life was in Mexico, and the lesbian who's only a lesbian.
That's a good point.
They're all. I don't know if it's intentional, but what it feels like to me is it's they. I think that because the first movie was so popular, they thought for this one, let's beef up the stuff with the characters, and so we'll give these characters some side plots and some sub romances. And I think that's a mistake because I don't care about these characters. I mean, if they're funny, they're funny. But like, especially the new girl, and what's his name, it doesn't matter. And then they go on a retreat. The Bells go on a retreat for no reason to work on their unity, which was not a problem. So they go to a retreat, and so that
Little, it was a super tiny. Like that's the thing. All of this stuff is they just kind of squeezed in. Oh, this is what's going on with them right now.
Except they didn't squeeze it in. They expanded the movie to be longer and bigger to make room for it all. It feels so long.
Because I'm a sucker for montages, and this movie has a lot of them. And because I'm a sucker for the singing, it's a 6 out of 10 for me.
It's a C.
It's passable entertainment.
It's C. It's not passable. I mean, it doesn't fail. So in that sense, it passes. But no. No. C. Wait, what did you say?
I said a B minus.
That's not what you said. 6 out of 10?
I said a 6.
So there's that. For what it's worth... Oh, and the whole thing with David Cross doing his own underground a cappella competition, that was kind of funny, actually, that had some funny stuff in it with one of the other groups performing there. But story-wise, it serves no purpose at all. Like, there's no reason for that sequence at all except to make the movie longer and to put in some more singing.
Well, technically, there's one reason, which is then the new girl feels awkward and doesn't feel like she belongs.
And she doesn't belong, as we pointed out. She doesn't need to be in the movie. So, yes, she should feel awkward. There's that. For what
I like
it's worth,
this. We have three on to the third, but we have three movies where you could easily say women are front and center.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now we have Far from the Madding Crowd.
Far from the Madding Crowd, based on a book, a novel by. Do you know who wrote the novel?
Yep, Tom Hardy.
Yes,
he's so diverse.
Big week for Tom Hardy.
Huge. Now this is the weird part.
Hmm.
I checked. He wrote this. Over 100 years ago.
Yeah, it. I know we're joking around. It was actually a different Thomas Hardy. It's a different Thomas. It was his dad, Tom Hardy.
Spoiler alert!
The actor.
Spoiler alert!
Dad, his very old dad.
So Dorset, England, 1870. Lovely time.
Sure, we've all been there.
Surprising to have a progressive woman, but that's what we have.
Well,
we
have progressive minded anyway, a little bit.
Progressive minded, yes.
There's not only so much you can do.
Bathsheba.
Bathsheba. Bathsheba Everdeen.
Bathsheba Everdeen. Everybody was like everybody was called that back then, though.
Bathsheba Everdeen. Yeah.
So anyway,
in school they had to call her Bathsheba E to differentiate her from the other Bathshebas in the class. Carey Mulligan plays her.
Carey Mulligan. Carey Mulligan is one of our best.
One of our best what? People? Actresses?
Actresses.
All right. I agree.
Actresses under the age of her age. 80. Or younger.
Under the age of 80.
There we go.
She'll be 30 next week or in 2 weeks.
Well, congratulations, Carey. Mm-hmm. Anywho, there's men a-courting her.
She is a single lady, and to get to it, she inherits a farm. So she's got a prosperous farm now. She's got one guy who had been her neighbor farmer, Farmer Oak, Gabriel Oak, played by Matthias Schoenaerts.
He's great.
He was – we know him – oh, he's Belgian. That's what he is. He was in Rust and Bone. He was in Bullhead. Remember Bullhead?
Oh, my gosh. That's who this guy is. I did not put that together.
Mm-hmm. That's that guy.
That's why he's great, because he's always great.
He's always great, and he winds up working for Bathsheba at her farm. But then you also got her other neighbor farmer, Farmer Boldwood, played by Michael Sheen, a few years older than her, and he also is a courtner.
And then we have Sergeant Francis Troy.
Tom Sturridge.
Who eventually comes in to play. And I liked it when she had two suitors. I liked the movie quite a lot. I was terribly charmed by the old school romance and the way that big questions were just plopped on the table back in the day,
right?
Because that's how things worked. And I loved her concept of perhaps having no need for a husband.
Except I liked that. Except that as soon as she said it, I said I knew that the story would end with her having a husband. Like they say that.
Yes. But this was the concept. No need.
No need. Yes.
That was the focus.
Should she happen to fall in love with a man, fine. But yeah, she had no need to be protected or taken care of.
And I thought I was going to enjoy the film when three men start going after her. Mm-hmm. And it faded slightly for me during that third act.
That third guy. Well, he's a scoundrel. She should not have gone for him.
Yep.
That's the danger. You come when you go with the here comes the youngest prettiest one and choose that one. No, it's going to be trouble. Go with the nice guy who's nice and humble, or go with the wealthy farmer next door, who's also respectable and decent.
But yeah, it didn't work out well, and some things happen. Juno Temple's in the movie for a couple of seconds.
To say that some things happen is kind of a stretch. A few things sort of happen. It is not a movie where a lot of things happen. Not a lot of happening in the movie. But
come on. They're washing sheep at some point.
They do wash sheep. And actually, the first part with the sheep and at the very beginning, that was alarming. I didn't expect that.
I did not know that sheep could do that.
We're like
lemmings. So willingly.
Yeah. I knew sheep were stupid. I guess it makes sense. They'll do whatever you tell them to do.
Yeah.
It's what is very much an old-fashioned, very chaste and prim and Victorian romance, and it's beautifully shot in, you know, the rolling, lovely, lush, verdant hills of England, and very charming and old-timey and old-fashioned, and you can get swept up in the romance of it all, and it's very Pride and Prejudice-y.
I didn't feel like – sometimes I didn't feel like we were spending enough time on certain emotions. Like I was just like, come on, let's let this linger a little bit more and explore this. But it just kept kind of moving on. But
I really like the three leads. I think are all really good actors, and they do a great job conveying with their faces the underlying emotions that they're feeling. Because also this is a time where people are not terribly expressive of their emotions. And I really think that Sheen and Mulligan and Schoenaerts do a terrific job with their performances. I liked it just fine. I gave it a B.
I liked it just fine. I gave it a 7 out of 10.
I saw it with someone who is the movie's target audience, a girl who loves Jane Austen and Pride and Prejudice and Jane Eyre and stuff. Not a girl, a woman. And she loved it. She loved every second of it. She said it is pure catnip. For her and
oh man, does she have cats?
And the ladies, she actually doesn't.
But she still uses catnip. Interesting.
Just recreationally.
Yeah. No, that's...
Well,
yeah,
actually, she may have a prescription. She may, it may be medical catnip. Far from the matting crowd.
Yeah. But easily out of the three, women are portrayed the worst in Pitch Perfect 2.
Definitely. Definitely. Yep. Anyway, those are the movies. And now it's time for Question of the Week.
Ooh.
I wonder what it is.
Oh, my gosh. Let's find out for the first time.
We asked you guys last week, sort of along the lines of Mad Max, what other movie ought to be remade by its same director, as George Miller has kind of come back to his Mad Max world. You know, because sometimes you make a movie and it doesn't come out so great, or you learn as things time goes on, and maybe you could do it better next time.
That's right.
That kind of idea. And Mad Max Fury Road, I would say, certainly is better than... I actually never saw Thunderdome. I've never seen that one. I'm gonna assume that this is better than that.
I liked Fury Road so much that I just want to revisit the world of George Miller. So I'm gonna watch Thunder Road again. Nice. Or Thunderdome. Sorry.
Thunderdome.
I remember feeling even at that time when I saw it, I was like, oh, PG-13. And then also it's just like, oh, I think it's about rescuing the kids. Like kind of like that Temple of Doom tone at the end of the movie where it's all about just like getting a bunch of kids out. It's like, all right, fine.
What about? Whatever.
Why are we caring about the kids so much? Why?
Well, in the 80s, the children were our future. So that was kind of a thing back then.
But now the future is upon us.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes.
I was going to start with the answers.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, Ryan says The Running Man.
Who directed that? I can't remember.
I do not remember either. But Ryan suggests going back to the original source material.
This is what I've heard. I've heard that that movie is definitely like get Schwarzenegger out of there. It was focused on the material, but I don't know who the director is. So.
It was directed by Paul Michael Glazer, best known as Starsky on Starsky and Hutch. He directed...
what's the last thing he directed?
Oh, Kazam.
Oh, okay. Then, yeah.
For sure.
No, Ryan, you're totally correct, Ryan, to want...
Yes.
The guy did Kazam...
He should come
back onto The Running Man.
Do Running Man again. Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
That was the last thing? It's like, yeah, you're not directing anymore.
Well, he does TV now. Lots of TV.
Okay. Yeah, he had to because he directed Kazam.
Justin says The Rocketeer, and I have not seen this in a long time. He says, imagine what you could do with that property in today's special effects combined with great practical. But I feel like that movie was so good the way it was. And like part of its – I don't remember how well the special effects hold up, but I feel like part of its charm was its sort of – it was its 1940s set, old-timey, you know? I wonder if making it look too modern would be a bad thing, but maybe.
Jeff is disqualified because he wants a sequel to Big Trouble in Little China. So we're moving on.
We asked for a remake, not a sequel.
Sorry.
I mean, yeah. We have rules. We have rules here.
Chad says Clint Eastwood would play Misty for me. Have you?
No.
I don't think I've seen Play Misty for Me.
No, I never have.
So, Chad, we believe you. We'll talk to Eastwood next time we see him.
We would like to have had more details on why he ought to remake it, like what was wrong with the first one.
Yeah. Is it just because he should make that movie faster? Because that's what he does now?
I mean, yeah, I think he's made like 50 movies since then, so he'd probably do it. It'd be faster and shorter.
He could bang that one out in a weekend.
Yeah, he probably could if he wanted to.
Yeah.
Another John Carpenter, Steph. Steph says Escape from New York. It's actually a pretty crappy film if you don't have any nostalgia for it, he says. Oh, shots fired. Shots fired at Escape from New York.
I agree with Steph. I agree.
Yeah, he says John Carpenter could only make it better if he had another go. That's probably true. Probably not true. Dallas Bennett says, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Because here's the thing. As I think correctly pointed out by Kurt, if Robert Zemeckis made it now, all the characters would be dead-eyed CGI abominations, which is absolutely true. He would be tempted to do his new motion capture thing instead of just doing old-fashioned ink and paper cartoons.
Yeah. And Kurt says Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Kurt, that movie is great. It does not need to be touched.
Explain yourself, Kurt.
Kurt, how could you?
Well, how would Spielberg – actually, Spielberg has said how he would make that movie different if he made it now.
Would we leave on the spaceship? Would we go?
No, what do you mean? He wouldn't go. He said that Richard Dreyfuss character.
Oh, that's right.
Spielberg said that now that he himself has kids, that he would not have. He can't see the main character leaving his family like that.
Now here's a Spielberg answer that does make sense. Andy says Duel, the car chase movie. It would be great to see Spielberg do something that is action and so low key.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
That would be really – like it'd be nice to have him sit with like just a character and, and try to deal with something like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Die Hard. Die Hard? Again.
The only reason ever to remake Die Hard is to get a better stunt double for Bruce Willis. That's it. That's the only reason. Get somebody that is also bald, and some like of the, Bruce Willis was.
Some of the
or special, receding,
and you could improve some of the special effects, I suppose. But yeah, I feel like you that wouldn't be
this one. On the other hand, Jonathan says Frank Oz should remake The Dark Crystal, which That movie is ready for an upgrade.
I would agree with that.
Might as well give it to Frank Oz.
Peter Jackson's The Lovely Bones says
I don't want to see anything to it's that movie. Blech.
I really enjoyed the book, and
I Steve's 100% accurate.
I didn't dislike the movie, but that's certainly one that could be. But again, I don't know that it would be any better with Peter Jackson doing it again.
Right.
One might just need.
Whereas I love this. Whereas somebody else points out, no. Peter Jackson should be doing Dead Alive because of the better special effects.
Yeah, although.
Go on.
Wasn't the fun? The fun was all the just the crazy amount of blood and stuff, and it was real as opposed to CGI. But there are other special effects that could be improved.
Man, all we're doing is saying that CGI is excessive and you shouldn't do it anymore.
Right.
As much as we do, we really shouldn't.
We should take it easy. We should
take it easy, everybody. Relax on the CGI.
Pause and just make sure that we really need all this CGI. Blowout by Brian De Palma. I would agree with that. I think he would probably do a better job of it now. Because that's a good example of a movie that was okay, but could be better if he had another shot at it.
Yeah, agreed.
That's pretty much it. Strictly Ballroom, Baz Luhrmann. Because Emily says this because it would be completely different, but just as awesome. That's probably true because Baz Luhrmann has evolved a bit in the last 20 years or
so. What is Baz Luhrmann up to?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him lately.
No?
No.
Isn't he? I felt like for some reason he was doing like a dual – like he's doing a project that somebody else is doing, blah, blah, blah.
I heard he was going to make a movie of The Great Gatsby. What does that come out, you know?
Oh, interesting.
Anyway, do you have an answer? You know I don't.
No, of course you don't.
I don't believe in answering questions.
I know this sounds stupid.
Well, I'll be the judge of that.
Reservoir Dogs.
Oh, go on.
And here's the thing. This is the only reason. You change a couple conversations and you have a new group of guys doing it. And like every 5 years, you just do it. This is my every 5 years movie.
So it's not because there's anything wrong with the first Reservoir Dogs.
Nope, nothing wrong with it at all.
Well, I think that if someone had given us that answer, you would have disqualified it.
I don't know if I would have. I would have thought, you know, that's an interesting way of looking at things.
You're right, though, that it would be good with other people.
I mean,
Reservoir Dogs could be like a play where every now and then you just stage it with a new cast, do it again.
Yes. Yeah. This is exactly what I was thinking.
Could be like Macbeth or Hamlet.
Yeah, and you know Tarantino's sitting on like a million of those like Madonna like a virgin conversations that he's just itching to get out. Yeah, so it's like, all right, insert here, insert here. Pick new songs. I think he'd be willing to do that.
Yeah.
Although then and as not, long as Steven Wright's available to be the DJ, then everything's good.
But if we're going to be changing stuff, then we're not restaging a play. We're like actually changing and updating it. That's different. Like they don't update and change the words in Hamlet every time they do it.
That's a good point.
And I'm comparing Reservoir Dogs to Hamlet.
As you should.
Sure.
It'd just be a Taylor Swift conversation instead of a Madonna conversation.
I suppose.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how you play this game.
It doesn't matter. The question of the week for next week, next week is Tomorrowland. Tomorrowland, based apparently on Tomorrowland from the Disney parks, I guess. Something to do with that. I don't know, sure. But it got us thinking about amusement parks, and we've seen a few Disney rides turned into movies. We're going to go broader than that, broader in scope than that. What amusement park element?
Ooh, nice.
Could be made into a movie.
Yeah.
So a ride or an attraction or something about, and not just Disney, but any amusement park, something that they could turn right. into a movie.
Anything.
Be creative here. Let your, you know, think outside the box. And
oh, I wonder if what was it called for you? It all had different names. What was the thing where it was just a circle mm-hmm. and you'd stand against the wall and then eventually the bottom would drop out?
The Gravitron.
It was called the Gravitron?
Yeah.
I think mine might have been the Barnstormer.
Mm.
Iowa. Mm. Oh, Iowa.
The
Barnstormer sounds familiar. It was something barn.
Ours was the Gravitron, and the carnival would come to my little dumpy town, Lake Elsinore, California, a couple times a year. It felt like it came very often, and it may have been in conjunction with a rodeo sometimes. And it was one of those traveling carnivals with, you know, the rinky-dink operation where mm-hmm. you know some drunk, dirty, tattooed guys would set up the rides, and then 5 minutes later, kids are playing on them. And I don't know how I always feel like people should have died on those all the time.
Oh, they did. They just – it was covered up very
just,
nicely.
Just hushed up by the liberal media.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we would go on those rides every time the carnival came around. Loved the Gravitron and the Tilt-A-Whirl. The Tilt-A-Whirl.
Tilt-A-Whirl.
Or the Whirl and Puke. That would make me giggle. The Tilt-A-Whirl would make me giggle.
Everybody always had this story of the Gravitron of like, oh, yeah, I was on it when somebody vomited. Or I was on it when somebody was able
was
to turn
around
all
the
way down.
Or, yeah. mm-hmm,
like, or
mm-hmm.
all the way around. Because you could keep moving slowly.
Upside down, you mean?
You could turn yourself upside down.
Oh, I did that. You weren't. Well, yeah.
You did that?
Yeah.
In the Gravitron.
Because you're
with
there.
No, there was. You were not strapped in. There was no seats.
Right. You're up against the wall. Yeah.
You're just up against the wall, and then gravity pins you against the wall.
Right. And so you just
went upside down.
Yes. Yeah, so you just move yourself, and
oh,
yeah.
I was too scared.
We weren't supposed to. I think we weren't. You weren't supposed to be allowed to. And, of course, if there are people on either side of you, you wouldn't have room.
Right.
But if there was space.
But nobody wanted to be near you because of the lack of.
Because of all the puking I was doing.
Oh, the puking.
And as I remember a time where the guy operating the thing, this may or may not surprise you, didn't care that much about his job. Wasn't that concerned about kids following the rules or not. And so everyone was doing that and, like, turning sideways. And, yeah, good times there in the Gravitron. Anyway, so yes, tell us about your amusement park or carnival thing that could be a movie. And you can email us at moviebspdx@gmail.com.
Or it'll be on our Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that's available at moviebs.com.
Just go to moviebs.com, and that will solve all your problems.
Yeah. Or you could start at oneofus.net probably and then make your way to moviebs.com, whatever you want to do.
Whatever you do, yeah. Just
hey, and some people, if you are looking for new podcasts, which doesn't make sense, there's no reason to. But if you were, one thing you can do is you can subscribe to oneofus.net's feed, and our show is included in that, and then you can get exposed, just like a Hulk with radiation or gamma rays. Oh gosh, what is it?
Gamma rays.
It's gamma rays. Yeah. Who's gotten radiation?
Peter Parker, a radioactive spider. Yeah,
right. Anybody else? Radioactive.
The people of Chernobyl.
Yeah, yeah.
Also were radioactive.
That's things just went down a notch. Mm,
Radioactive Man. Is that his name? And Fallout Boy.
And Fallout Boy.
Okay, now, what'd you watch? You watch anything? You watch anything else lately?
I did.
What'd you watch?
I don't know if you know this, but I watched The Road Warrior.
Oh, yes, you did. How was that?
Which, it's good. Mm-hmm. It's just as simple story-wise, if not even more so. Lovely bits of humor in that movie, I think. And here's the thing. It was a 81 or 82 movie, mm-hmm. Depending on where you lived.
Right.
And on iTunes, mm-hmm. the HD looks amazing.
Yeah.
It's still an absolutely beautiful-looking film. And sometimes, you know, Netflix – iTunes, whatever the case may be, sometimes a movie doesn't sparkle. This
right.
one sparkles.
No good. I watched there's a movie called The Last Stand. Not the one with Schwarzenegger from last year, but from about 10 years ago. The Last Stand is about stand-up comedians. You've never heard of it. Oh. You would have no reason. It was straight to video.
Okay.
Kevin Hart has a minor role in it, and that's why I was watching it for something I'm writing about Kevin Hart. It's a shame that this movie is not on Netflix because I want everyone to see just part of it. Kevin Hart in this, it's a dramedy about stand-up comedians. It starts with a flash forward of one of the comedians committing suicide, but we don't know which one. And then it goes back and it's the story and which one of these guys is going to kill himself.
Well, that'll be exciting the whole way through to wonder. Maybe he'll kill himself. Right. Maybe he'll kill himself. Maybe she'll kill herself.
Kevin Hart plays a ventriloquist.
What?
A bad ventriloquist. He's got a dummy. And in the show, he keeps arguing with the dummy for going off script. You know, like ventriloquists do. You're not supposed to say that. But then off stage, he's arguing with the dummy. And I started to think, so like maybe he's actually kind of crazy and thinks it's real.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of funny. Like, okay. And then he has a scene on stage again where he has a full meltdown. Kevin Hart does. Like a crying meltdown.
What?
Upset with his dummy for going off script and always belittling him and arguing with him. And the audience in the comedy club is like kind of shocked, doesn't know what to do. It's a bizarre, amazing scene. Like actually well acted. Like as Kevin Hart goes, like he's crying and he's very upset.
What about the dummy? Is the dummy good? Believable? The
dummy's pretty believable, yeah. I had to watch it twice to be sure that it really happened the way that I thought it did.
Okay, hang on one second.
Hmm.
Spoil this. Is the dummy like? Does Kevin Hart believe the dummy has awareness?
He seems to. Yes, he actually does seem to be mentally unhinged and thinks that his dummy is real. And that's the last we see of the character. He has this meltdown and leaves the stage, and that's the end of him.
Wow.
Yeah, it is insane. Weird. It is insane. And again, I wish it were on Netflix so that everybody could, or I wish that one scene were on YouTube. But yeah, if you ever run across a movie called The Last Stand on cable or something, watch for the Kevin Hart's big meltdown with the ventriloquist dummy scene.
Interesting.
Very, very bizarre.
Huh. Let's talk about it because it's coming to an end.
What?
You've been watching Letterman.
Oh, yeah, I've been watching Letterman.
I think Letterman is the TV personality that I have spent the most time with.
You were saying that.
Do you have an answer to that question?
It would have to be Letterman for me as well.
Because it wouldn't be any news person. It wouldn't be for me.
Any news person, and I've never consistently
watched. Or like morning
watched,
show host.
I've never consistently
like
watched The Daily Show or any of the other shows that are on every day. I never watched. Yeah, it would have to be Letterman.
And yeah, and like if you think about it, like this was a weird thing because I think Seinfeld's up there for me because of reruns and because he's appeared on talk shows, so you know that counts as seeing him. Michael J. Fox. But otherwise, it was weird to think about because it's like. Like Saturday Night Live doesn't count because it's
you only see people a few minutes at a time.
Only a few minutes at a time.
Yeah.
Well, but not only that, it's weekly and the cast is changing over. Like 8 years is pretty much the max unless your name is Kenan Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a very weird thing to think about. Who have you spent the most time watching on television?
Actually,
did you – what?
After Letterman, I bet mine would be Mike or Joel and the Bots at Mystery Science Theater.
Wow.
Because there were close to 200 episodes of that, and each one is 90 minutes long, and it's them. I mean, we see them in silhouette there in the theater watching their movies. But as far as like actual time spent with, yeah, it'd be those guys probably.
That's why I feel like I really wish there was somebody just running stats on my life that like I wasn't aware of, and then they would just send me detailed reports.
Right.
Like, this is how much time you've spent doing this. It was like, oh, that's very interesting. Thank you for telling
probably
me.
Probably when we die, we'll get a printout of everything. Oh. All the time we waste on everything.
Honestly,
yeah.
Now the afterlife excites me.
All right. Well.
If it's real, then that would be awesome. If like that would be exciting.
Yeah,
it was like here's your printout.
I started watching Letterman like probably about eighth grade or so. First, only on Friday nights when I could be up late.
Mm.
And then in the summers, I would watch every night. And do you remember? I think we've talked about this before when A&E started showing his first NBC shows four in the afternoon every day. And I remember when they started doing that because we had, of course, never seen his very first shows.
Right, right.
And then switched to NBC or to the CBS. And, yeah, I haven't watched the show regularly in the last few years.
I would say it was something crazy. Like, when he switched to CBS, I might have, like, at least for the first, like, 2 years, I might have seen 95% of those.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it was something just insane where I was just like, no, I'm watching it. But did you watch Julia Roberts? She was on this week.
I haven't watched her yet, no.
It was nice. She didn't have much of a chance to talk. And a lot of Adam Sandler probably did best work I've seen in a decade on his last appearance on Letterman.
I don't care about Letterman's guests, though. I want to talk about Letterman. Letterman is great, and I'll miss him. And it's weird. It's weird to think that he was only on NBC for 11 years, and that now he's been on CBS for 22 years.
I know, that is crazy. Tina Fey said, "Now there's nobody left on TV that we're afraid of."
Yeah,
or that, like, it was something like that, and it's totally true.
That's true. All the other talk show hosts are super accommodating and nice, and
super accommodating
pushovers.
And maybe. Yeah, no, because you're absolutely right. And I could see maybe people eventually feeling like Stephen Colbert is somebody that they're trying to impress.
Yeah.
But in general, it's like you're not trying to make – it's not like you have to try to make Jimmy Fallon laugh.
Right, no. Try not to make him laugh. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, you so like those guys, but you don't necessarily – there's not that respect and reverence right. like there are for Letterman. And yeah. And so much of – like he was such a huge influence on my sense of humor and on like when I started my comedy troupe freshman year at college, and I would be emceeing the shows, many people observed that I clearly had been watching a lot of Letterman, like just with my mannerisms and my gestures and the things I would do was very, very Letterman. And it was mostly unconscious, but I'm sure partly conscious too. He was just a big influence on me. And, you know, all things must come to an end. And I like the way that he has mellowed over time and become less of the crank and more of the lovable curmudgeon. Yeah. And he's just a good guy, and I'll miss him.
I didn't even mind when he hosted the Oscars. I was like, what? What was wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, I was a missionary at the time, missed that, but my brother taped it for me, and I watched the Oscars after I got home. And of course, I thought it was great. It's Letterman. It was great.
Yeah, Uma Oprah. I am so curious and hopeful that he does not do what Johnny Carson did, which is simply disappear.
Yeah,
I would love it if Letterman did not disappear.
I don't think he will because he's never been because Carson was always reclusive like that, and Letterman is sort of a loner like that, but he's not like that. Like he even now does do things. Carson never really did other stuff.
But wait, when you say he does do things, what do you mean? He's done an episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. Go on. What else?
Well, I guess
has
it's been
done?
A while, but he would sometimes show up on other talk shows.
Yeah,
he would do that.
He did Regis on occasion.
Yeah.
He was in Cabin Boy.
He was in Cabin Boy. You want to buy a monkey? Yeah. I mean, he might go away altogether.
It'll be really interesting.
Yeah. It's weird that the kids today don't remember Johnny Carson. David Letterman is our generation's Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
We were at the end of that generation for Johnny Carson. But I watched a lot of Carson, too.
I watched a lot of Carson high school
and up until he retired, and that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And
I watched a lot of Arsenio Hall. I've really enjoyed the talk show format.
I never watched Arsenio. It was Johnny and Dave were my the only two talk shows.
He was the
ever
thing. For me – Arsenio Hall in Iowa, Arsenio Hall would come out on at 10, so you could watch him for a half hour and then flip over to Johnny Carson.
Yeah, that was the idea. That's why he was on earlier.
Yeah.
But I didn't care.
Wow. So racist.
I mean, that was actually where my racism started. I didn't like Arsenio Hall, and then I decided to expand that to all people named Arsenio. And now I don't like any Arsenios.
Yeah. And you hate walking in halls.
I do. I hate hallways and I hate Arsenios. So
every time you walk in a hall, you're just like, ugh.
Hate this thing.
Ugh.
Ugh. So farewell to Dave Letterman. A major influence on guys our age.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of our show. Movie BS with Baron Snyder specifically, that show. To recap, go see Mad Max Fury Road.
Put down the iPhone or whatever you're listening on and go see Mad Max.
Go see it right now.
Do it. Come on.
It's probably a starting time like soon. Yeah. Just head to the theater now. Right. Go see that. Pitch Perfect 2.
It's a lesser version of Pitch Perfect. Whatever that means to you, you'll realize that when you see it. It's slightly less.
Or you'll convince yourself you love it just as much as you loved Pitch Perfect.
Don't you do that. Don't you be that person that convinces yourself that.
Yeah. And then Far From the Madding Crowd is a fine, lush period piece.
Here's the
romance.
Thing. Here's how it can work. If you are somebody who has classic female tastes and you are with somebody who has classic male tastes, you guys make a bargain, make a deal.
There you go.
I'll see Mad Max if you see Far From the Madding Crowd.
There you go. So you see them both, and you both are exposed to other movies you may not have chosen before.
Yeah, and, you'll walk out and be happy. Maybe you'll be happy about both. Uh-huh. And then it's a win-win, as we say in the industry.
Yep. There you go. And question of the week, tell us what amusement park element could be made into a movie. Mm-hmm. Be creative. Tell us. Give us details.
Yeah, we like details.
Uh-huh. And thanks once again to today's sponsor. I forgot the name of the blog already.
Oh, my gosh.
No, I didn't.
You said it would be
Inanimate Blog. Inanimateblog.com. With other fun movie reviews and stuff.
Allegedly. Now, we both liked Prometheus.
We did, yeah.
So.
I'll be curious to read her positive review of the movie she hates. I don't see, I understand hating Prometheus. That's a whole other discussion.
Oh, people can hate it.
I know, but being disappointed, sure. But hating? Come on.
That's
hating.
True, because it's still a good-looking movie.
Yeah, come on. Come on.
And he makes a one-handed basketball shot on a bicycle, like, many times, if I remember correctly. Or I'm forgetting. Maybe it was just once.
Inanimate Blog is a terrible site, but thanks for sponsoring us anyway. That's all for the show. Until next week, for Movie BS with Eric – no, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
Wait, what were you going to say?
I was going to say for Eric D. Snyder. I forgot the name of the show.
I'm Movie BS?
I guess. For Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I'm Jeff Bear.
That's right. Thanks for listening. And
oh, wait. No, come on. We got to do the whole thing.
Thanks
right.
for listening and good day. Just say good day.
I said good day.
All right.